Radio 930 WBEN. It's Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. It's Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Yeah, welcome. It is Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN on another beautiful day in Buffalo and Western New York. Not bad for entering the mid part of the month of October, thus making up for perhaps some of the rain and inclemency we had in spring of 2019. No complaints for me about this summer. No complaints for me about the fall, as if that would really matter. David Bellavia, Tom Bowerly with you on the radio, and we have a variety, a multiplicity, a myriad of topics we're going to get into today right here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Now, we had occasion last night to check out the movie Joker at a local theater, and we're going to offer our two cents for what it's worth about Joker coming up. But David, there is a big event. It's on our news. We put a link up on the Bowerly and Bellavia Facebook page. It's at WBEN.com. You're part of a really big veterans fundraising event on Saturday in Niagara Falls at the Rapids Theater. What is going on?
Well, Niagara Falls has just been really good to me, and so kind to offer all these different honors that we, you know, I'm very humbled by. They offered this Rapids Theater, which I don't know if you've ever seen this thing, but it's like a world class. I mean, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful facility. And so, you know, we're just going to have a fundraiser out there and try to not only thank the folks that were so kind to donate to the GoFundMe, but also help out some other charities, in particular my charity, but some other vet groups as well. And, you know, just take this opportunity to say thank you to everyone. Have a good time. And, you know, this Niagara Falls Key of the City thing is pretty cool.
So does that mean you get the key to the sewage treatment plant? I'm sorry.
So, too soon.
Too soon. All right.
No, they fixed that problem. But they've been very good to me, and I appreciate the mayor and all the other folks, the veterans who've been just really supportive. They do incredible things for vets in Niagara Falls, and it's cool to be a part of it.
So people who go are going to be helping out a variety of veterans charities.
That's the plan, and you know there's all these different codes. Go to WBN.com and you can see, you know, how to get discounts and everything else. The goal is to just, you know, take as much generosity as we can and give 100% of these proceeds to people who need them.
And spread it around.
That's right.
Tell us about the work of your particular charity with respect to your battle buddies, the guys with whom you served.
Yeah, you know, it's like so many of these veteran groups, you know, people volunteer because, well, you know, I served and I know guys like my guys are going through this all over the place, and anything we can do to give back is great. Well, I'm in a position where, you know, I could pretty much say I know the guys in my unit that are having issues, and they're good men, and they're struggling with stuff, and they're decent human beings who are trying to better their lives. And so why, you know, go to a charity that might help them in their little hometown? It's going to be our encouragement that allows these guys to, you know, to go out and talk to people. And some, when you look at the Army Emergency Relief Fund, it's set up by the Army to basically say, do you have the funds to get home for Christmas? You can't fly home from Germany because your mother died. So you take basically a loan from the AER, and they take it out of your paycheck, and you go do what you have to do. This works the exact same way. It's the exact same form. We have a board of directors who decides what's a real emergency and what isn't, but they just don't have to pay it back. And so we're taking proceeds of House to House, the book, that goes to the Deuce Deuce Relief Fund. And we're just trying to do as much as we can for the guys I know, I love, I experienced, you know, hardship with. And I know they're doing the best they can, but some of these guys are struggling. And there's other folks from that deployment that I don't know personally, but I know what they went through. So I'm saying that anyone that was in my task force, my division in Iraq from 2004 to 2005, they're all included into it. And we just want to do as much as we can for the guys that we serve with.
For those who don't know, David Bellavia is a recipient of the Medal of Honor, the nation's highest military award. I would argue the most important award this country offers in general. And David, you know, we remember the speech you did at the Pentagon Hall of Heroes. That was at the Pentagon, right? Hall of Heroes?
Right, right.
We remember that speech, and you are going to be doing another speech on Saturday live for the people who show up at this event.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, just some remarks. You know, that's just what I've been doing all over the country, and just want to acknowledge the people here in Western New York that have been doing good stuff and are kind, and you know, that's what's on the docket for Saturday, 3 to 5.
And for those who are interested in Medal of Honor recipient David Bellavia and this event this coming Saturday, October 12th at the Rapids Theater, 1711 Main Street in Niagara Falls, tickets are $22 at the door, but I think it's half off if you go through the WBEN.com website. You can go to WBEN.com, click on the article about David Bellavia receiving the key to the city of Niagara Falls. You can also go to the Bowerly and Bellavia Facebook page and click on the article there. And again, that will be this coming Saturday, 3 until 5 at the Rapids Theater, Main Street in Niagara Falls. You might think about getting there a little bit early. I suspect a lot of people want to shake your hand and buy a book and have it signed.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be great to see as many people as we can, help out folks that need it. Again, you know, we'd like to be able to have one-on-ones and do whatever they need to do, and it's really cool. By the way, today we just the White House just announced another living Medal of Honor recipient from Afghanistan, Matthew Williams, Master Sergeant, Special Forces out of Afghanistan. The action occurred in 2008, and he will be receiving it on October 30th.
And is it safe to say that as a fellow Medal of Honor recipient, you will be at the affair at the White House?
I will. I will be there.
Along with Gary Biker.
Oh, yeah.
Murder his last name.
Right. No, a lot of people, they do it to Bellavia, too. You know, yeah, we'll all be there. They usually make an extra effort for the most recent recipient to be there as well. So, yeah, I don't want to miss that. And this is a outstanding American who's done outstanding things, and, you know, just speaks volumes about his team and his unit. What's sad is that we just lost a recipient yesterday from New York. I think he was one of I want to say there's four living recipients in the state of New York. Gary Biker, of course, from Rochester being one of them, and Francis Curry from World War II. Incredible story from World War II. Earned his in 43, I think. He was 94 years of age. He passed away yesterday. That brought us down to 70 living recipients. And Williams brings us back up to 71.
Well, it is obviously a very rare honor conferred only to the best of the best of the best. And you know, I'm honored to work with you, David. And, you know, out of respect, by the way, for people in the political realm who are calling in or who want to know about NY27, I've known David a long time. And we already talked about NY27 on Monday. Nothing is going to change in any answer David is going to give at this point about NY27. So I am intentionally not bringing up NY27 every single day out of a respect for, you know, David, your desire to speak with the people who are intimately involved with the situation first before you, with any concrescence, tell us one way or the other whether you are going to run or not going to run. I mean, I've got my thoughts on that,
right?
Which have changed. I've got my thoughts on that. But, they changed from about a month or two ago.
The thing has always been, somehow this was I think there was a miscommunication where people thought that this was a process of deciding what to do. That's never been a problem at all. I've long been decided. I'm just not going to tell anyone until I talk to the people that, you know, are the people that are not only the decision makers, but, you know, there's a certain amount of respect that you give to county chairmen and their chair people. And you just want to sit down with them and say, look, this is my situation. This is what, you know, if everything works out, this is what I intend to do. If it doesn't work out that way, and again, it's not just a decision of, you know, whether or not the family's happy or whether or not everything's aligned. There are other things in my personal life with the U.S. Army that I simply cannot do. You know, it's not a matter of what my ambition is or what I feel compelled to do. The Army is going to have a say in that, too. So, but again, I think there's this tendency where cliche answers are, I need to talk to my family. You know, it's like you've run for Congress 72 times.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
What are you talking to your family about? Or, you know, I just have to listen to the people or do whatever. No, my thing is it's black and white. I have a series of commitments. I have to sit down with Army leadership and find out what's going on. But in the interim, I would like to talk to these committee people. The schedule is crazy. I'm home for, you know, 3 days at a time. But I'm going to get to all of them and pay them the respects that they've shown me and say, look, this is my private conversation with you. This is where I'm at. You tell me where you're at, and you know, I'll let you know where we're at next week.
But, you know, the nice thing is, David, when you say Army leadership, and we're not talking about a captain, we're not talking about a lieutenant colonel or a colonel. I mean, you kind of know the commander-in-chief of the U.S. Army.
Well, it all plays into it. But again, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, tell you that the this is just an incredible opportunity to be of service to your country. And when they're asking you to do something, you know, people might look at it and say, well, what is that? You know, what role are you playing by doing something like that? Well, there are no small roles. And you do some people run the ball. Some people block. There's nothing wrong as long as we score a touchdown. Who really cares? You know, you want to play a role. But I mean, again, if the president of the United States is going to go and he wants to make his announcement or he wants to do something over here, I'm not going to be the one that's going to say, you know, as we found out with the actual award, when, you know, no one had announced it, and then some media group gets it, which, by the way, it happened to this Master Sergeant Williams today.
Oh, really?
The announcement did not come from the White House. It came from the media, and then the White House had to go back and confirm it.
Yeah, you can certainly relate to that. I will never forget the Friday when the news broke. I will never forget the nightmare that 6 o'clock hour was. It was, it was great for you, don't get me wrong, the whole day, because we knew the announcement was coming, and it kept getting put off, and then the outside media outlet got it, and, you know, we kind of got scooped on our own story.
Well, and the other thing was that, you know, it's going to be today. It's going to be tomorrow.
Right.
It's going to be a week from now. It's going to be, you know, and then it never ended up happening. And then it was supposed to, you know, then it was definitely happening at this time today.
I lived through it with you.
Yeah, no,
I mean,
it
the pins just, and needles you were on.
And we couldn't even talk about a topic because it was like, you know, what do we bother to do? We were just sitting there. So for 3 hours, people thought we just had no preparation whatsoever.
Which is generally the case.
Which is.
We should probably point that out.
Get ready for another 3 hours of no preparation.
Get ready for another 3 hours of chasing squirrels. And no, David, that was not my devious way of getting you to talk about NY27.
No,
my point was, if I ask you every day, I mean, it's just stupid you every day.
I did an interview with Brian and Susan this morning, and I, you know, they asked me about New York 27 at the end of it. And somehow all these, my phone and people, you know, are just, did you just formally announce what just happened? No, that's essentially the idea that I'm undecided has never been the problem. What to do? What are you going to kung fu walking the earth barefoot, asking, you know, trees what I should do? I know exactly what I want to do. I have no problems making up my mind, no problems committing to something that I've decided I want to do. That has never been the problem. I have obligations and commitments, and honestly, I have duty to organizations that mean a great deal to me that I will not let down no matter what. There are men and women that, you know, are hooking and jabbing every single day, and they're well worthy of being just a small part that I could play in helping out what they're doing. But again, it's going to be an Army decision. It's not going to be a me decision, and I'm not going to tell anyone where I'm what I'm doing and where I'm headed until I talk to the party leaders who, you know, I need to feel them out.
Okay, I'm going to just make, as long as we're talking about it, and I was not trying to be devious and bring you over to NY27, you know me better than that. But basically, is it safe to say, fair statement, that David Bellavia will do what he and others believe is in the best interests of the country to do? Is that a fair statement?
Well, it's a narcissistic statement. I'm not going to go out and say that, you know, the fate of the nation is weighs on what I decide.
Well,
to do.
I said it about you, thus taking away the narcissism from you.
Here's what I'm saying. There are I don't see any of the candidates in that field that are bad people, bad candidates, or can't win that race. Right. I don't feel the opinions of, you know, I've been very consistent with how I feel the field is shaping up. I think there's more people that'll jump into that field, okay? And I'm well aware that a lot of people are talking about all the different things and what could happen with different candidate models and who's the strongest. I'm hearing all of it. All what I'm getting to now is that it's really about what's best for New York 27. And if this is a decision that's going to take months to make, I don't think that's good for New York 27. I don't think it's great that we're standing here at Christmas time wondering who's going to get in this race. What's the deal? That doesn't help the party. That doesn't help, you know, the opponent, quite frankly, benefits off that. The person you're running against. So I don't think it helps anyone to delay this process more than it needs to be delayed. And if we get to the point where we are not able to make a public We can't talk publicly about that decision because of things that are outside of our control, then we make, you know, a judgment call then.
Do you prefer Georgetown or Fairfax, David? Sorry, I can't help myself. It is 24 minutes after 3 at News Radio 930 WBEN. Do not take what I just said, by the way, as my having knowledge that you guys don't have, because I don't. It would be a terrible friend who continually harangues and asks somebody for an answer that is intensely personal and private between David and those to whom he is closest politically and in every other way. So don't take that statement as my having any special crystal ball or knowledge. But David is a real guy. And last night, David, it's a real guy thing, except we didn't leave a space between us with the seats, which I'm told is a faux pas when two guys go to a movie. But
I liked it better when it was a private screening in the offices of Entercom.
We saw
looking in a laptop bootlegged from Kosovo.
Well, those aren't exactly Hollywood blockbusters that are on that. But we saw Joker last night, and I want to talk a little bit about Joker, and then later on today. During the show, there is there's an update, if you will, on the whole vaping situation and what is causing people to get sick. And from what we're going to talk with John again from Demand Vapes. That's coming up after the news at 4 with some new information. And we've got a lot of other stuff we're going to cover along the way here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Bill Kennedy. It is Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN. The song by Steve Miller, of course, has nothing to do with the recently released movie Joker, which we had the occasion to see last night. And before we get into any movie theater etiquette, I just want you to know, when David Bellavia goes to the movies, David Bellavia does it in a big way. I mean, when David goes
to... Wait, going to the vending machine and getting... Or are we going with the nacho popcorn line?
I don't know where to begin. We're talking about the extra large soda. We're talking about the gigundous bucket, not of popcorn, but of caramel corn. We're talking
about
the
available
Twizzlers. And yeah, we're talking about, much to my surprise, the nachos. Of all the people in the world, I can't believe David bought the nachos.
Well, that's right. We did it. We went all out because that's what was available.
And it was specially colored popcorn.
It was
very interesting.
It was very interesting. How long it had been there, we don't know. But, you figure you want to get that whole experience. Even if you're watching it, you know, in you're watching a movie in your home.
Right.
Some people like to have the popcorn there. Maybe you're at a break room at work and you work for Robert De Niro and you're watching Netflix all day. You want to have it there too.
Well,
not to say that anyone here at Entercom would ever take time out of their work day to watch a movie.
Oh, of course. Maybe during the college basketball thing in March, we can't use the phrase everybody uses because of some thing. But
that's right. That's true. Or the big football game that plays at the end of the year.
Yeah, exactly. We can't say that either.
It's a great event.
Yes, a big event involving football. But last night was a big event involving a movie.
Did you like it?
David, I thought it was absolutely magnificent, and it is not my ordinary kind of movie. You know what I'm saying? I'm not like a DC Comics or sci-fi or Batman-oriented guy, but the movie drew me in immediately, and I was expecting there to be tons and tons of gratuitous violence. And there was violence in the movie, but there was a lot less than I thought there would be. But the job Joaquin Phoenix did in that lead role as Joker was absolutely sensational.
He's amazing.
As an actor, I was blown away by what he did.
Yeah, he's super talented. And, you know, but again, the era in which it, you know, late 70s, I think that's where they
judging
were going
from
for.
The cars, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there was a marquee that had, like, Blowout. That was a John Travolta movie in, like, 77 or something, so.
1981.
Oh, was it? Okay, so it was in the 80s, early 80s. But you could just see, like, you know, that that era of the United States, you know, New York in particular, that was a really rough, dreary time.
Oh,
you know,
it was.
And of course, this is in the world where it's Gotham, but, you know, is it Chicago? Is it New York? Whatever it is in the DC comic book world. But there really is no comic book anything about this movie. There's no superhero that shows up with powers. There's no real reference to Batman. This is, of course, before. No, there was some subtext with Donald Trump. You saw that.
Oh, clearly. Subtext with Donald Trump and Antifa.
And Antifa as well, yeah. So it was almost like Eat the Rich.
Right.
You know, like a neo-Marxism of you're rich and therefore you're automatically evil and let's just rise up and kill the rich people. Which you see, unfortunately, in cities all across America.
And you could also view it as a cautionary tale against mob violence and against the kind of behavior that engenders.
Oh, that's considering it's the enemy. It's the arch villain of Batman that is a progressive. I would say, yeah, though it's not definitely a plus, but it's a very disturbing movie about, you know, a guy who is obviously coming unraveled. And, you know, you see someone struggling with, you know, all these different issues. It's tough to watch.
Well, you know, I know that a movie is really, really good. We're talking about the Joker. We saw it last night. And, you know, when I know a movie is really powerful is when I'm driving home and I can think of nothing else. When I get home and I can think of nothing else. When I'm in bed after seeing it and I can think of nothing else. And that is the effect Joker had on me. And I am in awe of how Joker was brought to life. And again, this movie ordinarily wouldn't be my kind of movie. I couldn't get into Taxi Driver with Robert De Niro. I tried. I couldn't get into it. But like I said, this movie sucked me in immediately. And it was interesting, David, because it portrayed Joker as almost a sympathetic figure. And we can understand how he became so evil coming from the milieu from which he emerged.
Yeah, it originally the story of Joker is that he falls in a vat of acid and has to put the makeup on because he's scarred. That was the Jack Nicholson story. That was the comic book version, and you get the sense here that, you know, whatever version this is, you know, all the Jokers have been deeply, you know, scarred and deeply disturbed from whatever their trauma was. But this is, you know, real world 1981. Trauma. This is things that a kid went through and a guy went through that are pretty damaging. And he is going through, obviously, a tremendous amount of mental illness. But in a way, it's not there's not a lot of it's not look at the mental illness. Isn't it cool? It's not look at it. You know, are you sympathetic for it? It's that there are people that do things sometimes that are completely out of left field. And you know, maybe if we get to them early and get them the help that they need, they won't become violent and they won't wage war on Gotham.
Well, I thought Phoenix did an amazing job and a very nuanced job in showing the progression of mental illness in a human being. I mean, the subtleties were just so perfect, and it was an amazing performance to watch. How anybody could just get it that right is amazing, and God knows how many takes it took to do what he was able to do.
Has there been a character, though, that has resulted in so many Academy Awards?
That's a good question.
You figure a lot of people play Jesus. No one has received an Academy Award for playing Jesus. But if every Jesus movie that came out, the Jesus character received Best Actor, you would think to yourself, well, that's crazy, right? But Nicholson, who, you know, gave a great performance, never was considered, you know, to be a candidate for Best Actor that year. It was a Batman movie in the late 80s, I think 89 right. is when that came out. But Heath Ledger, you know, was incredible, and now it looks like Joaquin Phoenix, I mean, just from the early buzz, everyone's saying this guy's going to have another Oscar.
Yeah, it is one of the best acting performances I have ever seen. The storyline, I thought, was riveting. The nuances were tremendous, and it was just a very engaging, thought-provoking movie. I mean, this is not, talking about Joker, this is not just a blood and guts movie. It is a real psychological or psychiatric study into the mind of somebody who is really messed up, and how the outside forces which this individual finds himself caught up in determine and help to influence the way he behaves in society. And like I said, the movie does kind of present Joker as a sympathetic character, like, oh, I can see why he did that. I can see how that could happen, which was, you know, somewhat disturbing, I suppose. But is one of the things, and maybe this is a function of my not being a guy who ordinarily is into these kinds of movies, but one of the things that did bother me, having seen some of the other Batman movies and related shows, is how many versions of Joker are we supposed to accept? Right. Even something as simple as, what is Joker's real name?
Well, how about the fact that we've seen Bruce Wayne's parents killed at least 17 times
yes.
now, and every version is different. You know, it's almost like there are more versions of who killed Kennedy.
Exactly.
Than there are of. But would this mean that Don Jr. is Batman?
I believe it would mean if Don Jr. is Batman, if you accept the premise that the Thomas Wayne character is supposed to represent Donald Trump.
That's right.
Do you think that Thomas Wayne was supposed to represent
of
Donald
course.
Trump?
I mean, look, it's so to me, I think it's a really when you watch classic films, they're always obviously they're making references to what are happening in the real world. But if you watch, you know, there's Charlie Chaplin who dresses up as Hitler and starts, you know, juggling a globe. And
the Great Dictator.
It's obvious what he's trying to do there. But there's a lot of subtle things, and usually in classic cinema, you see things that are referencing the Holocaust or it's referencing whatever, but you could watch it 20 years later and get the same takeaway. This was kind of clumsy. I mean, it was almost like you needed subtitles. When you're watching Braveheart, and you're, you know, at the end, you see him, you know, being basically put on a crucifix. You got to be like, all right, you know, we get where you're trying to go with this here. But we doubt that William Wallace was very Christ-like, You know what I mean? But we get where the metaphors are going.
Sure. I mean, the fact is history doesn't actually know a lot about William Wallace. Knows
very
a little
true.
Bit, but the real William Wallace is an enigma.
Hey, but we know a whole lot about the Wayne family.
We sure do. Several versions of the Wayne family.
To the point where it's a little bit out of control.
We don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but given the context of the foreshadowing in the movie, did a certain part near the end of the movie surprise you, the turn of events that took place?
You know, to me, this film reminded me more of Fight Club than it did an actual, superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you've got, you know, folks out there that are trying to somehow get even with all the corruption and I understand. I guess the premise, if you believe that America is so wicked and corrupted that it needs an artificial default check back to a baseline that has to be done by the population through violence, if that's where your head is at, then you're going to watch a movie like this and say, that's sobering. But if you personally believe that America is just going through the ebbs and flows of what we've done since our country's founding, where you've got, you know, radicals, you've got crazy people, you've got, you know, it's an open society, people are going to take advantage of it. But I mean, if you go to the Gilded Age, you'll find far more in common with what is happening in America today than we're repeating a lot of it. I mean, the election of Donald Trump is very similar to the election of Abraham Lincoln. You know, people said, this is not a legitimate president. We don't want this guy as our president. And they seceded from the Union. They left the country because they didn't want this guy to represent them.
We will continue with, and we will have the 4 o'clock cash code word for you, oddly enough, right after the news at 4 o'clock on News Radio 930 WBEN. We'll also get an informational update on the vaping situation from John from Demand Vapes after the news at 4 right here where you're listening. David and I saw Joker last night. You know, in a word, David, I think we both used the same adjective after the movie, and that adjective was incredible.
Absolutely incredible. And the other thing, too, what I thought was strange is all of the, to think of children going to that movie, like a film like that. It's one thing when it's gratuitous violence or it's sex and you're like, well, obviously a child can't, but to not laugh, you know, to when you see a guy that's going through, you know, whether it's Tourette's syndrome or a mental illness and they say things that are zany and not meant to be funny, it's even more difficult to explain, you know, to a child that this really isn't funny. There's nothing about this that's supposed to be, you know, lighthearted. This is something that's, you know, supposed to show that a person struggling with something, we should have empathy. So, I mean, there's a lot of other reasons why you don't take kids to a rated R movie. You know, The Deer Hunter is never going to be something you want to play at a birthday party.
No, definitely not a kid's movie. And you know what? I would put the caveat, this is not a movie for everybody.
I don't think it's a thank you. But then I agree with movies like Chariots of Fire. I mean, that was, who needs Ambien when you have Chariots of Fire? I mean, there are some films out there like the original Gandhi, I think it was 4 hours long. Gandhi, fascinating, human being, incredible person in our history.
And you knew how it was going to end.
Do you need 4 hours of Gandhi? How about Wyatt Earp? That thing was just
8 days long.
Did someone have Wyatt Earp, the movie, lasted longer than Wyatt Earp, the person?
Kevin Costner, you are correct.
The English Patient, another one?
Was that long or was it just boring to you?
It felt longer than it was, probably.
But you know, that was like won the Oscar that year. So it's, and so did Chariots of Fire, I believe.
Well, but again, I mean, we happen to really enjoy Joker, but we got to put the caveat out there. It isn't for everybody. But then again, heading into it, it is not my typical kind of movie. But did suck me in.
So when it comes to The Irishman.
That is my kind of movie.
That's your kind of movie, and you would sit through 4 hours of that.
I would sit through 8 hours of it if it's good enough. Like, I would have sat through 8 hours of Godfather or Godfather 2.
Well, not the first time.
No.
Because the first time, it's you don't understand what this is, you don't know the genre,
you don't know the history. The first few times, I could not get into it, and that's after I'd watched Goodfellas.
Right. No, it's very true. And the other thing, too, is that also makes me appreciate how bad Godfather 3 is.
It kind of has grown on me, David. Is that heretical to suggest that? Probably.
It's horrible.
You know, one more thing about Joker. We don't have time. Real briefly, I think it's setting up a franchise of Joker movies. This is just the beginning.
Really, there's more unanswered questions?
Oh, I think we're going to see the progression even further of Joker, depending, of course, on what it grosses.
I'm just saying that one of the things that this movie brings up is that you really don't need superheroes if you have law enforcement, right? No one seemed to have any issues putting Joker in handcuffs.